Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 22 of Large Old Cup. My name is Corey, and you're here with me now. So after last week's episode talking about David Lynch, I was really prepared to talk about, like, Henry Rollins, who is someone who's a bit of a role model, mentor, inspiration, or you know, something like that to me. But so real quick, my work location changed, and I have to take a Lyft now to work every morning and every day back. So I'm sort of been, you know, meeting a lot of people that way, a lot of drivers. They all have their own eccentricities and what have you. And I had a driver, I think it was Tuesday morning, who's was listening to a podcast on the way to, you know, while he was driving. And the other day, you know, or earlier, like the week before, there was another person who had a podcast, and it was really kind of funny because it was just an odd experience because it was like really inappropriate what they were talking about. but yeah, this one was not inappropriate so much as it was fucking annoying. So it was this entrepreneurial podcast, and it was a guy talking to the host about what you needed to do to essentially mess with the algorithm. Like, this is what you need to do in order to get your work noticed. Except imagine, like, the, like, slimiest British accent you've ever heard in your entire life. And I don't mean that as an insult to, you know, to anyone from the UK. It was just, maybe it was just the things this dude was saying, but, like, everything that came out, every syllable, every word just was fucking vile. And I realize I'm reacting really extreme to a guy whose, like, whole thing was like, oh, you need to go into networking with your name, same fame, which is this fucking idea of, like, in 5 minutes or less, you pitch yourself to these to strangers. But it really, really bothered me because it was reminding me, so back in, like, 2016, I was working on a book. I ended up finishing it. It was like 900 pages. Got through a second draft, sent it out to some people for a third draft, and kind of abandoned it from there. There were a couple of reasons why I abandoned it. One of the biggest reasons, however, was sort of like just the state of being a writer and trying to get your work published. So, like, I'd been submitting short stories to, you know, magazines and online magazines and whatnot for a while and never got picked up, and that's fine. That's just the nature of the business. You know, I was collecting the rejections because I remember Stephen King said that he did that in his book. And it was really funny, by the way. This is a quick aside. Stephen King's book on writing, to me, is far better than anything he's ever written. Like, the way he describes writing is, like, super magical, and I'm absolutely for that. Back to this point, though. Everything online that I saw about the writing community, like, on social media, and at the time I was, like, on Twitter before it became a total fucking mess. I was on Twitter following, like, multiple writers and novelists and authors and publishers, and, like, seeing them talk about, like, oh, this is what you need to do if you want to get your work published. And it was like, you know, get thousands of followers and interact with people and, you know, leave comments and message people and network. And at no point was any of the advice given, be a good fucking writer. Practice what you do. Work on your craft. None of that was ever mentioned. And it really bothered me. And I realized, like, oh, it's a game now. Like, they have gamified the act of getting published. Much like this guy who was, like, this entrepreneurial thing was gamifying, like, how to have your own business or how to have your own podcast or whatever. you know, like he talked about like, oh, if you really want to get your name out there, you need to go on podcasts because of digital media is really big right now. And, you know, go on the small level podcasts and, you know, they only may have a few thousand listeners, but then you'll work your way up to the big podcast. And like, again, nothing was said about like, hey, be really fucking good at what you do. You know, like if you're going to go to like on a podcast, make sure it's a podcast that like is applicable to what you want to do or something that you really like or support or, you know, believe in. Instead, it was like, get on anything, get your name out there. Like, and it was reminding me of like the author stuff of like, oh, you need to comment and get followers and whatnot. And there was like a game to getting followers where like, there'd be like Follow Friday and like people would leave a comment on someone's post and then you would go and follow everyone who left a comment. And it was like, again, you're not following people earnestly or sincerely. You're just doing it so you could have people hopefully follow you back and build up this follower count of like thousands so that if you submitted a book or a short story to a publisher, they could look up your fucking Twitter account and go, oh, 5,000 people follow him. He has a ready-made audience. Let's publish his work because we know at least 5,000 people might buy it. And like you said, it's gamifying it. And most importantly, it's gamifying art. And maybe it's still like I'm on my David Lynch shit from last week and like still, you know, watching interviews and clips of him and reading about his work and his approach to things. But I remember him talking about how it was such a frustration for him at this, you know, the later as time went on, because like studios weren't willing to take risks on things that weren't proven properties. You know, like there's a reason that a few years ago there were multiple Marvel movies coming out within the same year, because they had this idea that, oh, people are just going to go see anything that has Marvel on it. You know, and they had a few swings and misses, but still, that's essentially what happened. And it was like Disney's same approach to Star Wars. Like, there was not a new Star Wars movie from, like, the mid-2000s until, what, the mid-2010s or whatever. And when Force Awakens did really well, they were like, oh, we're going to put out a Star Wars movie every year. Not realizing that, like, I think a lot of that was just people are like, oh, a new Star Wars. It's been, like, 10, 15 years since we had one of those. Let's check it out, you know? But, you know, that's fucking, you know, popcorn movies. And not to be disrespectful to popcorn movies, but yeah, it's what it is. I remember, you know, Coppola saying recently that those movies are like amusement parks. You know, they're not real art. And people getting, like, you know, like, somebody ripped their dick off about that comment. Like, how dare he say that these movies aren't art? I get so fucking sick and tired of people pointing out the most commercial nonsense and going, oh, this is art. And like, I understand that art is like whatever your definition is, but I cannot support that. I cannot support senseless IP pushing as art. That is just not what it is. And if you're going to do IP stuff, make it fucking different and make it weird. Like the Nosferatu movie that came out was so well done by the director, who is like an auteur, like David Lynch. He had his own vision and he followed through, and everything was so meticulously well done to support that image, to support the theme. Like, that's art. Like, slamming a bunch of fucking costume characters into the same scene, that's that art that ain't, you know? And I'm sorry, I'm getting like really worked up about it, but it really pissed me off sitting in this lift listening to this guy like treat something that should be something that you just sincerely want to do as like a get rich quick scheme. You know, that's what pissed me off. And it's more of like, and I think a lot of that is, like I said, the gamifying of things and also fucking grind culture. I hate grind culture. I hate it with every fiber of my being because it's some of the most insincere macho bullshit in the world. It reeks of toxic macho manly man nonsense of like, oh, I gotta get up and put in the work no matter what. No excuses, only results. And it's like, just completely dehumanize life. Because that's what it is. It's this idea of dehumanizing yourself, to remove the conditions of humanity in the pursuit of this thing. And, like, I remember, like, because that's how I, and it bothers me because I wasted time doing some of that in 2016. As I was writing this book, I was putting all of this time and effort into the grind culture stuff of, like, this is how I need to approach it in order to accomplish this. I need to be no excuses. I need to, like, work no matter what. I need to put all of my being into this and get something down on the page. And, like, there's a difference between getting the work done and forcing yourself to get the work done. And when you force yourself, you're going to get up with really mediocre results if you're lucky. If you're lucky. And like I said, a lot of that is, I remember there was some video where some fucking dickhead was saying, like, oh, you know, in 20 years, are you going to look back and think, like, look at what I accomplished? Or are you going to think about a life full of regrets? And it's, yes, that is a true statement. Like, are you going to look back on your life and look at what you've accomplished and have regrets? A, regrets are going to happen no matter what. That's just the nature of things. When you make a decision, there's a decision that you are not making in favor of. There are always, you know, when you have three options and you choose one, that means two options are never going to be followed up on. There are two paths in your life that you have said, that ain't for me, and you're going down this one particular one. So yeah, no, you're going to look back and you're going to go, man, what if I had done that instead? That's technically a regret. You're going to have them no matter what. And this, that, like I said, that trying to trick yourself into thinking you can live without regrets is foolish. It's absolutely foolish. But again, that is the idea of, like, when you think about life and you put your stake into it of, like, this is what it means to be alive. You can't look backwards and you can't look forwards. You have to focus on the present and right here and right now. You know, I could look back on all of that time I spent writing that book and go, well, I wasted a lot of time and effort for something that didn't happen. But I'm not going to do that because in the present day, I can go, hey, I wrote a book that was like 900 and some pages long. You know, I had a plot, I had characters, I had action scenes, I had romance, I had tragic deaths, and it was fun. You know, I enjoyed myself as I was writing it, even though I was pushing myself to get it done through toxic grind culture hustle bullshit. Okay? Okay. All of that being said, let's get into the notion of, like, why do we do art? You know? And I've been having this conversation with my friend Shelly a lot. Shelly, who's responsible for half of the closure of the every episode of Large Old Cup. Shelly is the person who devised Delusionally Confident, and I'm Recklessly Brave. So this is sort of a group effort. So we've been talking about, like, why do you do art? You know? And I had this conversation with a coworker as well. You know, why do we do this? Do you do art to make money? Do you do art to be successful? And there are some people who do. And to those people, I don't necessarily know if that's earnest. And I don't know if it's sincere. I can just tell you what my definition is. My definition of doing art is you do it because inside of you, there is a message that you want to communicate. And you're communicating it in a language that is fluent to you and sincere to you, and it's in your heart. And you're putting it out in that language into the abyss, hoping to find someone that can hear that message and understand it and reciprocate. That, to me, is why you do art. It's all about communicating in a language that doesn't feel alien to you. Because, yeah, you know, I'll be completely honest with you, I feel like an alien all the time. You know, I live in a world that I don't understand and doesn't understand me in return. So that's why I do art. It's a way of being understood. And recently, I came to the conclusion, right after the David Lynch episode last week, that my medium is this. It's spoken word. I used to think I was a writer. And I love writing, but it just, I don't know, it just didn't ever work right for me. It didn't feel right for me. You know, I know Dylan writes. Dylan, who's on the other podcast I'm on, you know, Dylan's put out a book. It's, you know, and I love Dylan's writing. He's so fucking funny. But regardless, you know, that's Dylan's medium. I know painters. I know people who make visual art. I know people who have made installations, and like those are their art forms. And for years, I didn't know what mine was because I can't, my hands don't work right. What I want to convey in my head never makes it out of my hands in one piece. It just doesn't. So for me, it's spoken word. And what's really funny is when you look at most definitions of spoken word, it's usually people performing poetry of some kind, like street poetry. And that also ain't me, you know? My definition of spoken word is this. It's talking to you. It's telling you a story. It's telling you what's on my mind, what I'm thinking, what I feel, what I believe in. And a lot of this comes from, you know, I mentioned him earlier, but Henry Rollins. I first discovered Henry Rollins, and this will be an aside. We'll do a deeper dive on him, mainly through his spoken word. Henry is an icon in the punk world. He was the lead singer of Black Flag. He was anti-establishment, always angry. You know, this rebellious, aggressive punk, for all intents and purposes. But Henry would do these speaking tours where he would go around and get on stage and tell stories. And he would call them talking shows, but it was spoken word. Because that's what it is. You're talking to people. It's not stand-up comedy. They can be funny sometimes. You know, stories can be funny, but it's not stand-up comedy. It's just, it's talking and conveying what is in your mind and what is in your heart and what is in your soul. And that is my medium. And that's what this is. Large Old Cup started as a podcast about a stream of consciousness, just opening my mind and my mouth and letting it lead me to where I needed to be. But in reality, it's spoken word. And so 22 episodes in, I have finally figured out what the point of this is. But we got here, damn it. You know, we climbed Everest. We lost three toes, but we still made it to the top, you know? So I guess that's what really bothered me about listening to this grind culture, you know, networking, gamifying art thing. Because to me, it's so insincere and it goes against the idea of why you do things. You don't, in my opinion, I don't think you do things to make money. Or you shouldn't. You do things because you have to do it. You have to do it. You have to get it out. You have to communicate it. You have to remove it from your soul and see what happens as a result of it. It is the primordial throwing a rock at a bee's nest. You might know what's going to happen. The bees are going to be pissed and they might chase after you and sting you, but you never know until you do. I have a tattoo of the tarot card, The Fool, on my arm, and The Fool symbolizes that. The card is this jauntily dressed man about to step off a cliff, completely unaware that that's what's happening, and that's what the card means. It's to move forward when you have no idea what's going to happen, and it's a card that, at the time, I don't think it made sense, but it felt right, and as I've gone over these last few weeks and months, it's become apparent that that's what I am. The tattoo is there to manifest this in me, to manifest the stuff that I need. So, Large Old Cup is part of that. Embracing spoken word is part of that. And like I said, for it all to be something that you can take and pervert and gamify, something that has had such a profound effect on me, just upset me. So let's talk about the impact of this. There is a thing at work where you join little clubs, essentially. And I joined one called Semicolon, and Semicolon, of course, is for mental health advocacy. And on the day that I joined it, I made a post basically introducing myself, explaining my, you know, my mental health stuff, and then talking about the things that I believe in. And in it, I brought up the end of the show. The mantra of recklessly brave, delusionally confident, and hopelessly optimistic. And I got such a strong support back from people who really, that those three sentences, or lack of sentences, those, was it, you know, six words really resonated with some people. One person said they're going to get it tattooed on them if I'm okay with it. And I'm like, a fucking course I am, you know, like that to me is the greatest accomplishment I've ever had as an artist. I was part of creating something that someone was so moved by that they want to permanently put it on themselves. How insane is that? How fucking insane is it that something that comes out of my mouth was enough that someone resonated enough with it? They're like, you know what? Let's get that done. Let's put that as a reminder, a mantra of what I need to do in my day-to-day existence. And it's just insane. You know, I like I said, I've never felt more accomplished. And Shelly, who I mentioned earlier, she's going to basically like an art, like craft show kind of thing. And she's taken the mantra and she's been making things featuring those words. And that to me is even wilder, you know, like at this point, Large Old Cup has exceeded my expectations. And it's such a small thing, you know. My expectations for this show was to give me something to do, to give me an outlet that wasn't, you know, that was opposite of my other show. Because the other show is just having fun with my friends. But this show is meant to, like, I don't know, be an exercise in self-reflection and an exercise in speaking plainly and sincerely. And there's just beauty in that. For it to then turn into something that came about and had such an impact on some people that they want to make art for it. They want to get it tattooed on them. And it's just, like I said, I'm almost speechless about it. Never in my wildest dreams could I think I'd have that profound effect on someone. So that to me is the most rewarding thing. It's not how many listeners can I get. It's not, can I make a living doing this? It's not trying to trick people into listening by having so many hundreds of followers and networking and getting to know the right people. Because if the work is good, people are going to find it. That is the abstract truth of it. If the message is good and clear and resonates with people, they're going to find it. It is the truth. And I feel like that's something that David Lynch would have believed in, putting out something that's earnest with no expectations of a result. It's just putting it out. If you're listening to this, I want you to know how amazing I think you are for it. Like I said, this is probably, on a surface level, this podcast is incredibly self-indulgent and self-aggrandizing. In reality, seeing how people have communicated to me about it, how friendships have been rekindled because of it, and how just a sentence that was told to me in a performance review that I took as a compliment, which is someone said, a manager said, "Corey, you're recklessly brave." And I was like, I'm going to take that as a compliment. And they just looked at me with a little bit of judgment. But like I said, that is so amazing and profound to me. So my song recommendation of the week is going to kind of continue on in that vein. The song I'm recommending is a song called Corona by the Minutemen. The Minutemen were a punk band in the 80s, which, in my opinion, some of the best punk music came out in the 80s. But what makes Corona by the Minutemen such an important song is you've all heard it before. It has been used for the theme for the show and movies Jackass. That guitar at the beginning was by a guitarist and singer named Dee Boone, who unfortunately passed away in 1984 as a result of a car accident while they were touring. But Corona is actually, you know, like I said, everyone associates that song to people getting hit in the balls or doing gross things or dangerous things or very funny things. But in reality, Corona is a protest song. It's a protest song about basically how this country has treated the Mexican people and how we've treated people in the Southwest of, you know, the United States. And the name Corona comes from the D. Boone seeing a woman on a beach, basically collecting empty beer bottles to take to a recycling center to deposit for money. And one of the lyrics is the very last lyrics is, "They're on the beach, I can see it in her eyes. I only had a Corona 5-cent deposit." So, you know, sort of like, it's the theme is injustice and greed. And that's, as we head into this really interesting time in American politics, which is the best way you can describe it, that's not horrific and depressing, but interesting. That particular group of people are getting a lot of unfair judgment and injustice, and you know it's coming from a place of hate and from greed, and they're going to be suffering, unfortunately. They're going to be bearing the grunt of a lot of ugliness and a lot of racism and a lot of just the worst fucking behavior and attitudes that, as a civilization, this country can muster. You know, this particular political party were brought in because I think people were of this belief that they were going to improve the economy, but I mean, these are all businessmen and billionaires and millionaires. They don't fucking care about the economy. It's serving them well right now. They're making so much fucking money from us, and they pulled the wool over enough people's eyes to trick them into putting in a position of power where they're going to play to the worst subset of our beliefs and our attitudes as a country. So the Mexican people and the Latin American people who are in this country to work and to provide and to follow the American dream and to make an honest living to improve the conditions of their families are going to be rounded up and sent packing, if not having abuse and insults and all manner of terrible things done to them in the process. And that's also going to be pointing out to our friends and family that are part of the non-binary and transgender communities, who are going to get a lot of unfair hate and a lot of unfair mistreatment thrown their way, because a lot of people can't get over a 1-inch fucking curve, and that is, you let people live the way they need to live. Because at the end of the day, wasn't that what this country was founded on? The idea that you can live the way that you want to live, that you'll have those freedoms to do so as long as you're not harming anyone. And guess fucking what? None of these people are harming you. Not a goddamn one of them. I got really worked up there and I apologize for it, but that is the spirit of the song Corona by the Minutemen, and that is the song recommendation. Probably the angriest episode of Large Little Cup ever, but like I said, I value sincerity in all things, and at the moment, there's a lot of insincerity out there in the pursuit of capitalism and greed, and that shit is fucking bullshit. So, be recklessly brave in the face of this, be delusionally confident in your ability to inflict change, and be hopelessly optimistic that the world can be a better place. Thank you, I love you, later days.